on Police, also welcome to the National Commissioner of Police and his team. Also welcome to the Audit Committee, the Secretary of Police. I also see the Special Advisor of the Minister here and other role players, and also the media, civil society. You're very much welcome. Honourable Members, we don't got a lot of time until about 1 o'clock, so we will have to move. Maybe just in terms of our program today, the real focus is going to be on where SAPS is in terms of implementing the AG's recommendations, but also in terms of the issues of performance management. From the Portfolio Committee side, we had an interaction with the AG just after, before the recess, and certain concerns were put on the table. So we thought it's appropriate that we rather now, even if this current year's reports have been finalized and dealt with, that we get again assurances that there is from the Audit Committee side the necessary efforts to ensure that there's progress in terms of the audit findings, but also in terms of the processing of the performance issues, the Alpha Bravo Charlie issues, the issues with regards to performance information, DPCI and CI. There's a lot of issues on the table. So that is really the main purpose. Honourable Members, we also last week requested, and that might be the last item, just to get an update from the National Commissioner on the issue of station safety. Where are we? What is the issues? We also related to those issues in the past few days, but let's leave that comments when we deal with that issue, Honourable Members. I'm going to ask the Honourable Members to introduce themselves, then we'll ask SAPS and also the Audit Committee just to introduce themselves, and then we'll start. Honourable Colabana, we can start with you.
Hi, it's Daniel Colabana, I'm a member of the committee.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Kiri Ramola, I'm a member of the Security Commission. My name is A.G. Mundiwai, the official list from the Committee and the County.
Goeiemôre, ek is Pieter Groenewald en 'n lid van die
Good morning, Chair and members. Honourable members, my name is Ollie van Neerden. I'm the Chair of the Police Audit Committee.
Good morning, Chair and members. All present. My name is Trevor Bolt. I'm a member of the SAPS Audit Committee.
National Commissioner.
Very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. When I look at the sub-delegation today, I have Lieutenant General Matamura, the Deputy National Commissioner for Policy. You can just make an exception. Then I've got Lieutenant General Mpazi, Deputy National Commissioner Management Advisory Services. Lieutenant General Ngoinya, Deputy National Commissioner HRM. And then I've got Lieutenant General Tumane, Deputy National Commissioner Crime Detection. Then Lieutenant General Gente, Deputy National Commissioner Management Intervention. Then I have Lieutenant General Jamsa, the Division of Commissioner Visible Policy. Lieutenant General PC Musigiri, Divisional Commissioner Crime Detection. Lieutenant General Khan, Divisional Commissioner, Legal Services. Major General Nkosi, Internal Audit. Major General Singh, Executive Manager, Office of the National Commissioner. Brigadier V. Naidu, Spokesperson, National Commissioner. Brigadier S.J. Smith, Section Head, Forensic Database Management. Kenneth F.E. Salele, Section Commander, Biology. Kenneth J.P.A. Certain Section Commander, Crime Investigation Services. Kenneth E. Moss, Section Commander, Management Information and Strategic Planning. And Kenneth B. Stain, Parliamentary Services Staff. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, General Stolle. Any other members?
It's a good advice to the minister.
Chancellor of the
Good morning, Chair. A.M. Sheikh Imam, member of this committee.
Thank you very much, honourable members. General, we will start immediately. If you can start with the AG progress made on the findings. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable Chair. Our presentation is a permission beloved by Mr. General. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General.
Honourable Chair and honourable members of the committee, good morning. Honourable Chair, we've submitted quite a comprehensive presentation on the actions implemented to address audit findings on SAP's performance information. Due to limited time, I will not go into the detail of any slide, but just touch on what has been done and what progress has been made. Chair, the presentation will be done in two parts. Firstly, we will deal with performance information, and then there will be a presentation on the financial part. And there will also be a presentation by the audit committee on matters or actions that they have implemented. Chair, just a general remark. In terms of the, or since the last audit report was published, the South African Police Service, from a performance management perspective, implemented actions. I think the most critical one was to go on a national visit to all the provinces and to address all station commanders, etc., on the audit findings and what needs to be implemented to address the audit findings on performance information. The good news is that taking into account the latest audit, we managed to clear all audit findings at the ORS, or the Operational Response Environment, the Border Post, etc. And I think that is an indication that it's possible to do it through a comprehensive effort. But unfortunately, the news is not as good as the rest are concerned, but we will touch on that and give you an indication of what happened. In the previous audit, there were two financial programs that were audited, the Visible Policing Program 2 and Program 3, the Detective Service Environment, of which I will deal with the first one, Visible Policing, first. There's a couple of slides, Chair, that I just want to refer to and indicate to the committee that from an implementation perspective, a number of actions have been implemented, looking at system design, looking at the redesign of our directors, our standard operating procedures, etc., that relates directly to the open system, liquor, etc. Now, those are not currently in the APP that is, or the last APP that has been audited, because it has been removed and it's been put into the annual operational plan of the respective divisions. But we have implemented specific actions to make sure that the data is correct. On slide number 4, you will note, when looking at the confiscation of liquor, the actions that has been implemented, and that is currently being monitored in the annual operational plan of the division. Still continuing on slide 5 with the captioning of liquor on our respective systems, we've reviewed the standard the forms that are used in the processes. We've looked at the appointment of OPAM coordinators at all the organizational levels. They've also designed a purpose-specific compliance checklist at stations, and so that is to ensure data integrity on the OPAM system. On slide 6, still on the confiscation of liquor that has not been captured on the system, the quarterly OPAM reports are currently being distributed to monitor the performance information that has been captured. All the entries that are made on the system are monitored on an ongoing basis, and the division has also implemented process flow to sensitize members on the specific activities that needs to be followed when we're looking at the captioning of liquor. This is also an indicator currently that has not been monitored in the 2017, or that was not monitored in 2017-18 APP. And as a result of that, the auditor did not audit that specific information. On the next slide, slide 7, it continues. Further information that I can highlight there is the compliance visits and unannounced visits that were made to stations on a quarterly, on a continuous basis to verify the implementation of corrective measures and also, as far as possible, to apply or to provide on-the-job training. There were also 72 compliance inspections that were conducted at various points, police points, to ensure data integrity. Then information sharing sessions that we had on the same topic on slide 8, the details are listed there. In all the 9 provinces, you will note that there's been information sharing sessions to address the data capturing of open systems. Drugs confiscated. This indicator was also removed from the 2017-18 APP, but it is currently measured for the purpose of management information in the annual operational plan of the specific division. And on a continuous basis, comparisons are made between the SAP 13 registers where the confiscations are captured versus what is captured on the OPAM system. And they also conducted OPAM training during the 2017, 16, 17, and 17, 18 financial years. Slide number 10, the evidence reports about school safety program. Just to get straight to the point, this is still problematic. There were findings made by the AGSA on the implementation of the school safety program that although it was not similar to the previous findings, that is still problematic in the sense that we are finding it difficult to provide the relevant evidence of implementation of the school safety programs. The information sessions were conducted, a National Safer School review session was conducted with the Department of Basic Education. The TIDs were reviewed, etc., but we still have a problem with non-compliance as far as that is concerned. The school safety continues. I would say you will note the dates that the respective provinces were visited and where presentations were done, and to assist the provinces who were not reaching their specific targets. But unfortunately, as I already indicated, a similar finding were made by the AGSA on the implementation of the school safety program. When we're looking at the capturing of firearms, we are reporting currently on the number of firearms that were seized by the South African Police Service. If you look at the actions that has been implemented, there was a recirculation of the specific directives that relates to the circulation of firearms. The enhanced firearm registration system was enhanced to make sure that we do not circulate firearms that were recovered in the previous financial years. But despite the initiatives that have been highlighted, the same finding was raised in the 2017-18 financial year, and it will be presented when we get to the annual report. So there was a limited impact that was derived from the initiative that was implemented, and mainly due to non-compliance to the specific directives that have been issued. Still on the same, firearms incorrectly reported as found within the current financial year and the overstatement of performance. Honourable Chair, the actions that have been implemented is similar to what we've highlighted in the previous slide, where the firearms were basically correlated on what has been populated on the systems, and the initiatives taken implemented by the SAPS to prevent the finding was not successful, and we also, the main problem that we have identified as far as that is concerned is again the fact that there is non-compliance at the level where the firearms are supposed to be all captured. The late circulation of firearms, the actions that have been taken, all of which are listed on the left, it relates basically to the directives, the announcement of the EFRS system, and inspections that were conducted in the relevant entities, but despite the actions that implemented, we still have similar findings that relates to the late circulation of firearms, and once again, it's mainly due to non-compliance with the directives that are associated with the specific indicator. I would say on the next slide, it is a continuation, and it further refers to the inspections that were conducted on the number of the following firearms that were circulated as indicated at the bottom. Consequence management, where non-compliance was identified, consequence management was implemented, and it is currently being monitored at national level, but as I already indicated, we still have a similar finding in the audit that was conducted on 2017-18 financial year. Moving to the firearms, the limitation of scope, firearm applications that were not provided. We have reviewed the TID and as indicated the EFRS system was enhanced, and we managed not to get a similar finding in the 2017-18 financial year. The method of calculation, that has been addressed. The storage challenges have been elevated to the Office of the National Commissioner. Containers were procured, additional spaces were allocated, etc. And as a result, we did not have similar findings on the specific audit findings that were raised or indicated on the top of the slide. So moving to rural safety strategy, that has been the implementation of the rural safety strategy as required and indicated by the technical indicator description. The actions that were initiated by the division visible producing have been highlighted and the dates have been quoted, but unfortunately we still have problems as far as the accuracy of in-order completeness and completeness of information is concerned. And once again it relates to the fact that we have a high level of non-compliance at the stations where this information has been captured and kept. The same applies to slide number 19. Just some more detail on the actions that has been implemented, indicating that this was discussed at the Provincial Coordinators Forum that deals with rural safety, provincial workshop that has been conducted, and there were several sessions that was coordinated by Visible Producing as indicated. But despite that, we still have levels of non-compliance. Okay, moving to the performance indicator on national reaction time, the IR numbers, pocketbooks, I think in main it comes back to the pocketbook issue. Once again, SAPS have implemented a number of actions, compliance inspections, directives that were reviewed, consequence management was applied where these incidents were identified. We are currently submitting quarterly reports to the Portfolio Committee on Police. We have instituted disciplinary proceedings against 204 members from 1 January 2016, in the 2016 financial year, and disciplinary proceedings against 34 members in the current, in the January 2017 to 31 March 2017. But again, we still sit with the problem that we have made limited impact and we're still struggling with non-compliance with the directives, and consequently we have an audit finding again on pocketbooks that are not properly kept. The same information applies to number 21, is just the detail or more detail on the actions that have been implemented. And what I would highlight on slide number 21, Jay, is that a committee has been established at the national level to look at the pocketbook itself, to see how the pocketbook can be enhanced to make it easier for members to keep record of events, and then also to review the current standing orders and other internal controls that relates to pocketbooks. Honourable Chair, in terms of Program 1, those were the key findings that were made, Program 2, those were the key findings that were made in the previous financial year. And as I indicated, Honourable Chair, we made progress in terms of findings that were made in the ORS environment. As I said, we managed to clear that, but unfortunately there are still problematic indicators that we have recurring or repeat findings. Going into the detective service environment, where we had the misclassification of women and children for the purpose of monitoring the different rates, in this case the trial ready rate. The trial ready rates were excluded from the previous APP, but it was put back into the 2018-19 APP again, so we will be monitoring that. But there was no audit conducted on the specific indicator. But there was an improved performance of 83.56% at the end of the 2017-18 financial year. The fact that it's not included in the APP does not mean we are not continuously monitoring it. It is still part of the AOP of the relevant division. The calculation of the detection rate on cybercrime, it is specific interventions have been implemented as indicated on the left-hand side with reference to the review of the internal controls associated with that. We have also initiated the process to put the DPCI, this specific indicator relates to the DPCI, and we have initiated action to include the DPCI on the efficiency index system of SAPS, where we will then move away from the manual calculation of the indicators associated with DPCI to a computerized system based on the data that has been captured. This is still a work in progress. And all of which I think by the time that it's been fully implemented, we will be able to see what the impact of the specific actions were. The indicator serious commercial related crime, the action that has been implemented as indicated there, the indicator was revised as agreed and recommended by the DPCI, and a similar finding was not made in the latest 2017-18 audit. As far as the audit findings that relate to detection rate for serious commercial crime, I would say that is highlighted on slide number 26. where there's differences in detail and duplicate reporting and misstatements. Now, as I indicated, the same corrective measure that we've implemented to address the problem also includes the efficiency index system, and the DPCI is currently made part of the efficiency index system, and we will only see what the impact is once they've been fully included and we can start with the electronic calculation of their results. To slide number 27, we have redefined the indicator according to the SMART principles as indicated. The same principle applies. We are busy building it into the efficiency index system, and we will soon be in a position to assess the impact as far as that is concerned. Priority case dockets for fraud and corruption, slide number 28. The findings have been listed, Chair. The actions are indicated. It's the same corrective measure that has been implemented, and we will also have to determine the impact once the inclusion of DPCI and EIS has been concluded. Slide number 29, same principles that apply, misstatement identified in the calculation. Maybe I can just mention at this stage, Chair, all the indicators that relates to the DPCI environment were previously manually calculated. So all the findings that were made relates to the fact that those manual calculations were not accurate, and we are now busy with the DPCI to take all the performance information into our system so that it's done electronically, and we then derive the system from the SAP source systems to make sure that we have accurate and complete information on the performance of the DPCI environment. The audit findings that it relates to the limitation of scope on the IBIS or the ballistic cases. The corrective measures have been implemented as indicated, and the detail is reflected in the column on the left-hand side, and we do not have a repeat finding as a result of the corrective measures that has been implemented on the specific or the previous finding. Slide 31, in cases completed within the prescribed time frames. The detail, we are giving our chair a detailed list of actions that has been implemented. We have reviewed and explained to the AJSA the method of calculation that we used. Maybe on this specific slide, I want to say one of the problems that we did highlight with the audit committee and with the AJSA is that certain methodologies that were previously accepted by the AJSA, when you come to a specific financial year, now suddenly they do not accept the methodology anymore. But we have taken that up with the AJSA, and I believe that we will be able to resolve the problem. Specifically on this audit finding, we did not have a repeat finding as indicated on the right-hand side. Cases completed within the prescribed time frames on the ballistic still with the IBIS or the ballistic indicators. Division Technology Management was approached by FSL to change the method of calculation as it is indicated there. And so it was basically a system design that was done, and as a result of that, we managed not to get a repeat finding on the specific finding as indicated on the slide. 33, case registered on FSL after the completion date. The corrective actions was implemented as indicated by the division. They implemented input controls on the FSL administration system, and that resulted in us not having a repeat finding on that specific indicator. The indicators that are not well defined and targets that are not smart, we have reviewed it as advised by the AGSA. We've also reviewed the standard operating procedure, IBIS 0002B. It was updated, and as a result, no repeat finding was done on that specific audit finding. By the DNA intelligence case exhibits cases completed within the prescribed time frames, not included in the numerator, the detail is there. As indicated, it's the same principle that applies to two slides back, and corrective measures were implemented, and the finding did not reoccur during the 2017-18 financial year. The same applies to the next finding, that cases completed within the prescribed time frame, not included, etc. As I indicated, we have implemented, we have made adjustments to the systems, and there was no repeat finding on the specific matter. Limitation of scope on the DNA case exhibits. the actions that have been implemented are listed there. That basically relates to the way that the cases are being dealt with and registered on the system, and the findings, that this specific finding did not reoccur in 2017-18. Cases registered on FSL after the completion date, the corrective measures were implemented by the Division TMS, by the Division Forensic Services, and the form of the validation checks were implemented that are performed on every transaction that has been captured, and as a result we do not have a repeat of the finding. The booking out of case exhibits within the 21-8 working days, the actions implemented, we did take note of the recommendations by AGSA, and there was not a reoccurrence of the finding in 2017-18. The backlog, that the prescribed time frame and associated indicator that talks to the backlog, the indicator was not well defined and the target was not smart. We did adjust according to the recommendations, and the current backlog performance is sustained under the 10% target, and it was during the first quarter of 2018-19, the backlog indicator was at 6%. The routine case exhibit still within the forensic science environment. Similar principle, the method of calculation that was questioned by the AGSA, we did the necessary adjustments, and there was not a reoccurrence of the finding in 2017-18. The same applies to the next one that talks to routine case exhibits, case completed within the prescribed time frames, with the detail of the actions that have been implemented. Important is that we managed not to get a reoccurrence of a finding in the last financial year. Honourable Chair, so I think the committee will note that measures have been implemented to address the findings that were made by the AGSA. Unfortunately, there was some mixed successes in certain environments. We managed to clear all the findings, but in other environments, as far as the performance information is concerned, we still have problems with, and primarily due to non-compliance with the internal controls that are applicable to the relevant indicators. I would say just briefly want to take you through to the performance management system that is associated with the SMS members within the South African Police Service, and how we as the South African Police Service have taken note of the commitments within the delivery agreement of the Minister of Public Service and Administration. They basically reviewed the performance management and development system that is associated with senior management and heads of departments. And that was implemented as indicated on the 1st of April 2018 within the South African Police Service. And we revised the methodology or the management system of SMSs in the South African Police Service to make sure that it is aligned with the directive that has been issued by the DPSA. So in essence, the system that has been implemented and the adjustments that we made must to make sure that the SMS performance agreements, that they are aligned with the department strategic plan, the annual performance plan, and as well as the government focus areas as it is outlined in the HOD's performance agreement. Now, not going into the specific detail, basically what it boils down to, Chair, is that going forward, there's three main elements in the evaluation performance or the performance management of SMSs at the levels of Director, Chief Director, and Deputy Director General that talks to employee performance, organizational performance that's based on the annual performance plan, and then what is now being added is the Auditor General's opinion and findings. So the details are there, and I'm not going to go through the details specifically. The most important thing that we want to highlight here is that the Auditor General's findings is from now on going to have a direct impact on the assessment of the Director General and the Deputy Director General of the Department. The critical portion is the last three lines at the bottom, where you will note that the performance assessment will comprise 60% of the final assessment of the DG and DDGs, organizational performance 20%, and then the Auditor General's opinion a further 20% on the final score. So we have built that into our performance management system for senior managers in SATS, and in going into the next or in the going going into this current financial year, the auditor findings as it is reflected will now definitely have an impact on the assessment of the DG. I'm not going to go into the detail here, it's not necessary. Basically what it shows is there's a link, we need to establish a link between departmental performance and individual performance, and we need to take into consideration the impact of the auditor findings. We cannot ignore the auditor general's findings that were made when we do the assessment of senior managers. And just touching on the performance measure or the corrective measures that has been implemented, we previously presented this as well, Chair, where we indicated that when we look at the implementation of consequence management, all consequence management is not necessarily negative. We will also look, we have to basically look at two dimensions where on the left-hand side you have a level of unsatisfactory performance where the organization then has to implement the necessary action to make sure that the employee is at the level to perform that is required from that employee, and then on the other hand where you have misconduct, and then when we have a case of misconduct, the disciplinary procedures of this SAPS must be implemented. Chair, I think there is some detail on how many disciplinary actions has been implemented. I think the committee can read through that at your own time, and I will close the presentation there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Can we maybe go to the presentation of the audit committee?
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I'm not going into much detail, but I'll touch on some of the highlights of what I believe is important. The slide itself will cover the intervention in respect of matters raised by AGA and SAPS, and then we have a conclusion on the way forward in terms of the audit committee's responsibility. In terms of slide one, the committee will note that we have in terms of the SAPS performance information, we have a standing item in terms of performance predetermined objectives that is on the agenda for the year. And in terms of our four meetings during the year, we had discussed the quarterly report and three and four of the department, and more specifically the latest one in terms of 1890. During the interrogation of the status report, we paid special attention to the achievement of the target and the reasons provided in those cases where management did not comply. The audit committee also requested regular feedback from management on the action plans with regard to the audit findings of internal audit and AGSA. In this regard, the audit committee attended a special accountability workshop that was arranged by the department on the 18th of May 2018, where we specifically looked at the management interventions, and we actually had a session with all the provincial commissioners, deputy commissioners, as well as cluster commanders, station commanders, and where we actually requested them to give us an explanation in those cases where the performance information objectives were not met. And we specifically, during that accountability session, requested the department to enforce more strongly consequent management as a result of this committee's request in October previous year. So we paid special attention to that. We also looked at the action plans that was tabled, and we on slide three, we will give you a little bit more feedback as what came up. We came to the conclusion that the current process of consequent management is not functioning as required within the department. The error rate has increased with many repeat audit findings from the AG as well as internal audit. The responses by management to audit findings are not always up to standard. The action plans, for instance, do not conform to the SWOT and principle that is required in terms of prior national tracing. And also the process of root cause analysis could be further enhanced. Those were our summary of coming from the accounting session. The audit committee attended a follow-up meeting officers were asked to go back and to come back with a more specific action plan regarding the audit findings. Various shortcomings were identified again in the internal control system that needed to be improved, and emphasis was once again made to hospital management. In terms of the audit steering committee that was established by the department, we stressed the importance of regular monitoring of all action plans and supported the establishment of a permanent audit steering committee. This steering committee will also assist with the coordination of those police stations selected by the AGSA for audits in terms of their audit coverage plan. At the attendance of one such meeting on 30th of May 2018, the audit committee once more stressed the importance of constant management. During the feedback session by the above-mentioned steering committee, the interim findings of the AG was noted, and the department was requested to pay special attention to the remaining audits in one province, which was called Kwani. We also asked the internal audit division to also assist the department in preparing for those audits by the AG in the Polokwane area. In terms of the asset verification, which was also a audit finding by the Auditor General, we took note of the fact that the asset verification project plan was initiated in August 2017, and we also took note that the accounting framework for disclosing net assets in annual finances was approved by the accounting officer on the 18th of June 2018. Now, this project is still ongoing, and the countrywide verification process of network assets by CETA is planned to be completed by the end of September of 2018. From what was presented by the department in collaboration with CETA, deemed to be sufficient to clear the finding raised by the AG in 2017 audit. Unfortunately, follow-up audits by the AG and SAP's internal audit regarding the 2017-18 financial year, however, reflected on certain repeat findings, and these areas that should be further attended to by the department and which will be monitored by the audit committee on an ongoing basis. I would also like to stress, Chair, that the audit findings that the department has received is still in the process of finalization. We still need to meet with the Auditor General this Friday in order to obtain further clarity in terms of the findings, after which we will most certainly take the matter further in terms of looking at the action plan that will be provided by the AG by this department. We also have internal audit. We ask them to focus more on the 17-18 to assist the department to address issues raised by the AG. An audit of performance information in the region, province and stations were executed by internal audit, as well as an audit on the financial statements, particularly focused on network assets, irregular expenditures and commitments. In terms of the audit plan for 2018-19, the following audits are planned in 2018-2019 to further assist the department to address specific issues raised by the AG in the past. An audit of supply chain management in terms of items below 500,000. An audit of computer assets, which include network assets and other computer hardware. An audit of contract management, which was also a matter of concern to us. And tender processes above 500,000. And then also to follow up on the AG audit findings and provide regular feedback to the audit committee. There will also be follow-ups on audit performance of information, as well as audit of network modernization of the division technology management services. This has been completed, and the outcomes will be tabled at our next audit committee. The next slide is blank, as you would note. But I would like to specifically relate, and this is why we left, we couldn't get all the dates. The one hampering factor for the audit committee over the last 5 years was the leadership stability within SAPS. Over the last 5 years, we've had 4 accounting officers. That in it on its own creates a massive problem for continuity, as well as the impact on leadership, because every time there is a possible restructuring of senior leadership lines and as well as reporting lines. So hopefully that is now will be stabilized and we will be able to move forward with a more stable accountability model. If we look at the next slide, as far as the Financial Audit Steering Committee was concerned, unfortunately there was also problems that we experienced with that steering committee, which is the steering committee that relates to the Auditor General and should actually smooth out the audit as it starts and finishes. As a result of the absence of the CFO during critical stages of 17-18 audit phase, certain of the current audit findings could have been resolved according to the audit committee. And we've requested the department now to stabilize this very important part of the monitoring audit. The audit committee has also requested that the steering committee provide regular feedback to the audit committee regarding any shortcomings identified during the interim audit phase of the AG, as well as all the internal audit findings throughout the year. The feedback by the steering committee will be a standing item on the audit committee agenda. In terms of the ways forward, Chair, the audit committee has noted the special effort that the department has taken to improve the overall internal control and accountability process, and is confident that with the support of top management and regular interaction with and feedback by the provinces, and this is very critical, the situation should improve. The audit committee will furthermore continue to monitor the progress with the implementation of action plans on a regular basis and assist on a more effective consequence management process. We've taken note of the department that has implemented a more specific performance management system as indicated, and we hope that as from the 1st of April 2018, we will start to see more consequence management being imposed at the lower levels of staff. As far as the CFO's position, we have noted that he is currently still on suspension, and we hope that process will be finalized as soon as possible so that we can move forward on a more stable financial steering. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Is that all the presentations on the audit outcomes?
There's another one on the financial statements, but as I indicated, the person, General Nelson, who is supposed to do the presentation...
We'll wait. We can wait. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you, General Sithole, for the presentation. Members, we will now go to questions on these issues. Maybe the first few from my side, and then I'll go to the other members. I think what Mr. van Heeren said is quite true. The instability, of course, at national level, be it the executive authority or national commissioner played a role, and also the position of the CFO. I think we acknowledge that. But the reality is there's quite clearly the repeat findings with regard to issues that is at the coalface, at station level. It is the big problem. In my interaction with also the AG, it's clear indicated the plans that's put at the national level is fine, the approach, but the filtering down, that's where the problem is. So the whole question of consequent management is the big issue. And National Commissioner, we saw the numbers of members, consequent management, but my dilemma with the presentation is your provincial commissioner should be in the dock. They are responsible for the stations. And I mean, the presentation today actually again indicates the committee's views on the question of cluster commanders. If your cluster commander is a well organized manager, those issues won't arise. So your dilemma is, and maybe you can indicate to the committee, your provincial commissioners, they must ensure that these things happen. It hasn't that. I mean, you've got now repeat findings for the third year in a row on basic issues. And really, in terms of the station commanders, we know the picture in the country, and the members, they visit on a weekly basis. That's your dilemma. And what is your plan, sir, to really turn it around? Unless you deal with that head on, acknowledge that you don't have got maybe the people, and do the necessary changes, you're not going to change the situation. That is just the reality. And we need to turn around with regard to that. So that is my Honourable Kalabana.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'm just so disappointed. You know, we could always brag that the SAT was the one entity that year after year after year had the fabulous clean audit. And I thought last year was just a once-off disaster, but here we sit again. I mean, to hear that there are repeat issues that you haven't dealt with. I know you must have met with the Auditor General people, because you do, in the run-up to putting together the audit report, and yet here we sit, and hear this catastrophic news. I'm also quite surprised to hear, I mean, the suspended CFO was appointed in September 2015, and he led you up to your first qualified audit. And it's still going on. What happened to you have to finish a disciplinary, etc., within a couple of months? It just drags on and drags on, and you end up with this kind of issue. But I think you also need to look at why you hired someone who obviously couldn't do the job. Why would you do that? It's like the chair was saying, you have station commanders who aren't station commanders. Once they get in, then they'll be trained to be station commanders, and eventually they'll be able to do the job. In the meanwhile, everything goes down the drain. They won't. I've got station commanders who won't use their maintenance budget because they think they have to save it. So water drips out the taps and the toilets leak and there's a hole in the ceiling. Won't use them because they don't know how to. Because you keep on doing this. You've done it at the highest level, you do it at the lowest level. So you've got a big job on your hand as the new, you know, you're lucky, frankly, you hired just after all this happened, I'm guessing. But you were around while it happened. All of you, many of you in this room, were around when the Paklane and the Shezi issue was happening under your noses. Under your noses it happened. And now we've got the issues coming up. Auditor General go through you lot. They used to just brush by and say, oh, that's always great. I'm guessing they now dig in a shovel when they want the information. They don't brush by anymore. They look at everything now. So it's a huge issue, and I agree it's about consequence management. We heard the term a moment ago. Where are the consequences? You had people who were suspended, I think, for officials who permitted irregular expenditure. Nothing was done. No consequence management at all. They simply go back and do it again. You have goods and services of over 500,000 procured without bid, competitive bid, dished out to who? To relatives, friends, who? Gupta companies, we don't know. But it's been allowed to happen, and all of you were there. You were all watching. And it allowed it to happen. You were, when things were run properly, and I know where I'm looking, it was clean as a whistle, and you never had an issue, and now there's shame that we can't go out anymore and brag about you. We have to say, oh, they've got such issues there. So really we do need to know that there's going to be consequence management from station level, provincial level, to the highest of the high, right the way through. People are being allowed to get away with things, people are being appointed who can't do the job, and now this is how it bites you. The issue of your property is the last thing I'd like to address. Really, is it not time that you took responsibility for your own assets, specifically the buildings, or the leases? All your issues in relation to buildings go back to Public Works. We know they're a disaster, but it seems to me you don't have them by the scruff of the neck. They're a service provider, and they don't provide anything to you. I mean, go to any station. We go to stations, two in KZN in the last month, where listed buildings, one was stripped out completely. There's still just empty windows. The flooring was lifted. That's supposed to be part of the SAPS building, but the contractor took the money and ran, never to be seen again, over a year or two ago. And it sits there. Now there's no security for the station. I went to Dundee station yesterday. The detectives have been taken and put in a listed building next door to the station. There's no aircon. Can't be, because you can't put aircons in. There's no heating. There's no security. You can't put burglar bars on a listed building. So the detectives' filing cabinets sit right here, next to huge windows. It would take 2 seconds for a couple of guys to reach in and take the whole filing cabinet. There you've solved your problem, like they did at Mountain Rise, but they burned them in the backyard, and your dockets are gone. So, really, you've got to sit down with Public Works and just read them the Riot Act and say you guys are going to run it yourselves, because they are failing you on every single level. Tell me what you've done. Tell me there's something proactive that's happening in this regard. Thank you.
Honourable Mumula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In 2016-17, the AG and internal audit highlighted that some of the officials in the service of staff and close family members were awarded contracts who failed to disclose such interest as required by Treasury Regulation 16.8.4. We loosely indicate whether this situation has been addressed, and please provide details of all the contracts awarded to either serving staff members or relatives. Second question. Will you please indicate whether your internal control framework is effective, relevant, and institutionalized? My third question. Have the challenges around the disclosure of network assets been addressed, and does the staff have a reliable asset register? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mula. Honourable Mula Batsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. First question is, in the past, we were told about the problem of measuring in the quantification of litter. We were told, I remember it was addressed by General Booth, that you had a problem of measuring the content of the quantificated liquor. Tell us what is the situation in that regard. My next question is on the consequence management. I think, what steps, if any, have you taken against officials who have incurred irregular expenditure? My other question is, we are dealing mostly with TMS issues, but I see your acting head of TMS is not here. My next question is on slide 20, you spoke of the distribution of pocket books. Now my question is, it's not only the distribution that we are worried about. We are worried about the way they are being monitored for effectiveness. What are you doing in that regard? My last one, you had a serious shortage of hearing kits at police station level. What is the situation in that regard? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Rabachi. Honourable Krillevold.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, when we had the change of management, I was quite optimistic that there will be some drastic changes in everything. And I said exactly what you said in the beginning. I mean, we can ask many questions, but I just want to ask one thing. If I look at the submission from slide 12 to 21, it's on the firearms and rural safety. On each page, It says limited impact was derived from initiatives implemented mainly due to non-compliance to directives. On each one of them. Non-compliance to directives. Non-compliance to directives. Anyone. Action taken to address the findings. When you talk about applications of firearms, license and everything, it is due to non-compliance of directives. Now my question is, if there is no compliance to directives, what steps are taken? Why then do you issue directives? I mean, if you're a well-disciplined member, if you receive a directive, if whether you're a station commander or a cluster commander or whatever, then you have to comply to that directive. But now we see there's no non-compliance. So my question is, well, what are you doing? It comes to consequential management. But I just don't see it. And I think this is the core of the problem with Jefferson. Because it seems there's just not compliance. The commissioner or whoever can issue as many directives as they wish to, they just say, oh well, it's just another director. So I would like to know how you're going to handle that specific core problem.
Thank you, Honourable Trevor. Honourable Daly.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions, and my first one is, I think, springboards from the same premise as Honourable Kurabal's question, which is the fact that the remedial actions that were outlined in the presentation speak to tinkering and enhancing and reviewing or revising the policy level of the system. So we're going to do this to the TID, we're going to do that to the SOP, we're going to look at that national instruction. But if the issue is around implementation, then it's that's the level at which things should be addressed. It's about whether we have the capacity and the skills, etc., to actually implement. Because a well-designed policy paper, but that is poorly implemented, is as useful as having a bad policy, quite frankly, because you're not going to get the results. And in particular with reference to slides 4 to 15, where it is the non-compliance issues that were highlighted, and therefore resulting in the repeat findings. I must say I have some sympathy for the station and cluster level of the system, and it's been pointed out that's where the issues are with the non-compliance. Of course, you have operational and administrative imperatives that are bearing down on the officers at those levels. But I'm just wondering if there's been a clear and rational understanding and approach of how things should happen given those two imperatives. So for example, and I guess this is my core question, is when it comes to, say, for example, the capturing that should happen on OPAM following confiscation of liquor or drugs or recording the firearm information to be circulated, is that meant to be done primarily by the Police Act members? So the people who actually confiscated the liquor from the Shebeen and take it to wherever it's meant to be held. Are they meant to be then follow up to do that, or is that handed over to PSA members? But I think it's in that particular scenario that you need to look at what's going wrong. Is it the fact that the operational members can competently effectively carry out the operation, but they don't have the skills or the time or whatever the case might be to then follow through with the administrative aftermath that should happen regarding OPAM? Or if it's being handed over to public to PSA members, what's the problem there? Is there a gap in the flow of the system? Are there not enough of them? do they not have the skills? I think that's where I would look, not necessarily or primarily at the policy level. So that's my first question, Sheikh. Is this primarily a Police Acts members issue, where they're fine operationally, but with the admin follow-up things for the parts? Or is it primarily PSA members who are doing this, and therefore there's an issue with the handover or the capacity in that dimension? And then my second question, Chair, is with reference to slide 5 of the Audit Committee presentation, where there's mention of the fact that the root cause analysis of the underlying factors for the audit findings should be enhanced. I'm assuming there was already a root cause analysis done based on the previous adverse findings. And so I'm curious to know what that root cause analysis said. Because if that got to the roots of the issues, then were there adequate interventions and measures put in place to follow up on that? Or was the root cause analysis itself defective and therefore not useful for the remedial actions to actually then have the impacts? And we heard it said that there was limited to no impacts in a number of performance areas. So I'd like to get an outline of what that root cause analysis said and what the assessment of it or the implementation from it was if we get to these repeat findings. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question or a clarification. Slide number 55. I don't seem to understand what this juncture here is. The FSL admin system does not support the exact method of calculation as required by the CID. There's a juncture here. It's a method that is used not compatible with just to clarify myself, in the 8 working days equals 55 calendar days. This is clarification on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Markey. Honorable Mabija.
Very good, I'm sure. On internal audit plan 2018-19, I see that contract management and tender processes about 500,000. But then in 2016-17, some of the goods and services of the transaction value above 500,000 were procured without inviting competitive bids as required by Treasury Regulation 15A6.1, and some deviations were approved by the accounting officer even though it was not impractical to invite competitive bids in contravention of Treasury Regulation 15A6.4. Was there any recurrence of this contravention?
Thank you, Honourable Bijo.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to start off by asking, do you not believe, in light of what you find in there, the problem does not seem to appear much on the top, but more or further down, particularly at station level? And I must tell you that no matter how good a report you give, the challenges on the ground are something else, I must tell you. Really, truly, you just can't put it together. It's chalk and cheese, oil and water. Really, that's the problem. And sometimes you are getting interventions by national departments, but all that happens is you go there, you identify the problems, you go back, and nothing happens further. The ideal example is now in Chatsworth Bayview Station. I think the minister was there recently to promise to come back. Nothing has happened, and it goes on. But having said that, clearly we have a problem in terms of capacity, particularly at the ground level. Is it not time to do things differently? Because we are sitting with people that do not have the passion to be in the policing department. Should we not look at a completely different recruitment process in future so we can identify the right people that we can put in these places? And I'll give you an example.
of the challenges that people face on the ground. I've had complaints of people that have applied for posts that were advertised 5 years in a row. The names are there, and every time it's been saying, no, we didn't find it. You're getting correspondence next day. So there's a lot of manipulation also that's going on. And I don't know whether, you know, some measures need to be put in place so that, you know, we do things objectively. And that seems to be one of the problems that we seem to be facing. I see you're talking about the school safety programs. You've got a mammoth task coming now in the Western Cape, I must tell you, now that liquor is going to be legalized in all the schools. Have you provided for that? Have you made some? Because I can tell you now, it's going to be a crisis. Western Cape is a crisis with alcohol. Now you're allowing that. Are you going to be able to handle that? The other thing is this. There is no, and I must repeat, there is no proper management at level. I want to tell you, at any given time, I know police is always complaining to the stations about resources, particularly vehicles. I think if you go with me right now and we take a tour of the city alone, I'll show you how many police vehicles are parked at the houses for 4 hours, 5 hours, 7 hours, and 10 hours. There's no passion, there's no commitment, there's no dedication. And that is why you're having a problem. And I think it all boils down to one thing, and you're not alone in this. And that is when it comes to the consequence management. All the departments are failing. That is why I have no interest in going on an oversight anymore. We go, we identify the problems, we come back, and what happens? Into 5:30. What are you going to really do? Because you've got repeat offenders again and again and again. Who's protecting them? Why are they still with us? Why are you not getting rid of them and bringing in people? We've got a 27% high unemployment rate in South Africa. There are lots and lots of them that have a passion. And that is why I said before, maybe we should start introducing it from school level so you have people with commitment and passion rather than everybody that's unemployed just coming onto a job. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you, Umar Mashom, you're welcome.
Well, Jefferson, I must first apologize for coming late. I flew yesterday, so I had to land this morning. Well, Jefferson, I think as the honorable members have spoken, it's clear with me that with the South African Police Service, we will talk as members of the committee till cows come home, because for a doctor to be able to treat the patient, the doctor must first identify the root cause of illness of a patient. If you haven't identified or diagnosed the patient correctly, it's very much impossible that you can be able to come up with a correct prescription to remedy the problem. We are not told as this committee as to what led to this paralysis. Is it the shortage of skills? In order to address that skills gap, what measures have been put in place in order to ensure that such won't happen? We are presented here with just, you know, computers of today are very smart. They can guide you how to develop a PowerPoint that will be flashed out there smartly and convince the politicians that things are going on. When you go overside, you come across like that station of Pashabisa with a dedicated captain who is just helpless, completely helpless. No assistance from aerial management. Captain is collapsed, but dedicated to the service of this great nation. But generals there on top are fighting their personal wars of manipulation and control, each one stepping the one at the back, leaving the service to the poor people down there, completely, you know. And that is why, Jefferson, I said, when everybody was making a clamor of noise about attack of our police, who were brutally murdered in that station in the Eastern Cape, I said, you let us on an inspection and look for them. As an oversight committee, we were given a very nice picture of rolling out of Tetra, which was then to be escalated to KZN because they had finished the rollout of that Tetra in that province. I then asked, was this tetra sleeping on the day of attack of our police officers? No answer. Is that we are moving the goalposts? There will be cameras and all that. But if you have got this, which costed taxpayers billions of rands, buying this system from the French companies, well, what is it that is happening? All of a sudden, General Shed is suspended now. And Scopa is verifying the veracity of corruption in this particular nonsense. Where are we? That is where I am. Lamenting. I must say, Chairperson, that as a member of this committee, we made an oath to the people, before the people of South Africa, that we will be loyal to them to ensure that as long as South African police cover each other, General Pashane just ruined the whole system here. And that is not... Honorable Gona Palais is correct. Not even a single finger raised by his colleagues to say, you chief, you are messing us up. And I have written an email to you, Chairperson, because we are told that, no, we are done with the vetting of senior management, even in crime intelligence division and all these divisions. But you can't rob police officers in this system. Those who are trying to do good are actually then made their lives to be so miserable because they actually then raised the alarm bell about the rot taking place in our police force. Where are we? Do we have the interests of this nation at heart? I doubt it very much. Goes back to what the esteemed member declared, said that there seems to be sustained fiscal dumping taking place here without any service output. And I tend to agree with him completely. Over 20-something odd years now, where is the problem that led to this paralysis? Is it the lack of skills? What initiative has been taken to address that skills gap? Members have spoken about consequence management. If things go wrong at a particular chain of command level, what steps are taken? It's no use to tell us about these long, and I'm not even interested in this because my house there in Pelican Park, I cannot even see. It's like you are sinking in the document, but without a tangible movement forward. We have been to China, we have seen how these people are working. We have even said, what needs to be done? Even at the college level of South African police, so that we can produce men and women who will take this nation forward. Chairperson, I don't want to waste the time of the committee because I can tell you we would be lucky if we can get a single of these things. In Newlands West, where I stay in Durban, detectives, you know that station is just in the mall, which currently has been bought by Shakur Sheikh and the Zuma's son, Duduzani. And you know, detectives, completely unprotected, station falling apart, and everything, because somebody is actually getting his hand greased, because police is harbored there under the lease. I wonder even how much is paid monthly, that inflated cost, so that somebody will be enriched at the expense of the state. Taxpayers of South Africa will put in the bill through increased VAT, so that those top bureaucrats there who just get kickbacks from this rot, we will only be saved by Scopa. Highlighting all this. So what? National Commission, what has led to this? What if it is skills? What has been done to address that skills gap? that can actually convince us to say we have actually identified this. No doctor can prescribe the right medication to the patient without diagnosing the problem. That is why, Chairperson, when time comes, we will address that question of rogue elements even within crime intelligence, so elevated high in Japan, causing us mess in the province of KZN. But when that time comes, I will actually talk to that because I have made my oath before the people of South Africa. We are not going to shy away from criminals using state power for their own narrow ends. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Let's go to the responses. General Sitole and your team, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Yeah, Chair, I'm sure it's a very emotional subject, and I would like to start with an apology for making the members of the committee feel like this. But Chair, it might just be important for me also to start with my own root cause analysis, as I also received the report, and unfortunately, not long that I also received it, and I had to get into discussions, including with the Auditor General. The first thing, Chair, that has been my experience has been the limitations which have been put on the accounting structures. I can basically say, as I engaged and I confronted them, I discovered that they actually almost have nothing, because several issues were pointed out in their report, and those reports were not necessarily very much attended to. And I wanted us to start correcting there and say, let those structures, internal audit committee, let them be given their mandate to operate, and I assured them of my support and also the actions relating thereto. Therefore, their reports at the present moment, they are given serious attention, current and previous reports. Then two, I'm also glad that the last honorable member talks to skills and other things. There are things that we just need to confront them as they are. I think currently we are busy with the rationalization, which is the deployment of capacity back to police stations. One of the areas of our challenge has been that capacity and experience at the police station has been drained over a period of time. Now, the drainage of capacity from police station moving further into the triangle has actually caused problems, where you might then be sitting with a number of people who do not necessarily have the sufficient experience and capacity to respond to this. Hence, it pushes you to continue with almost permanent consequential management, but there should be a balance between consequence management and as well as that. But the action that we've undertaken, we are currently implementing the rationalization, and we're taking capacity where it belongs. And our first priority is police stations. The second one, which I have also discussed with the accounting structures, is the link between financial misconduct and the disciplinary code. I think honorable members have spoken about regular expenditure, consequential management, but when it comes to irregular expenditure and any other kind of expenditure which might have been incurred and causing damage to the state, I think that links from Section 34 of the Public Finance Management Act to Section 81. And as you implement the sub-disciplinary code, then Section 81 of the Public Finance Management Act also need to be implemented simultaneously. And that's one area that we have also addressed, so that we link the two, because there has been a gap between the two. We might take action against a person, but if this person has caused the state damage, and as a result the state has incurred expenditure, then it means, in terms of Section 81, we must also still recover back from for this back to the state. Then there's also been a challenge of value chain accountability. And this was informed by the performance management system gaps. I think the type of shortcomings that we have, or failure, let me call it like that, it holds us all accountable from the top right up to the bottom. And the gaps in the performance management system did not necessarily help us to hold each and everyone accountable, because the focus could be, let's apply consequence management to the station commanders. The chairperson talks about what's the role of the SASA commanders. And as you take it further, it escalates to the role of the provincial commissioners. But the first thing that I have discovered from my level was a gap in the performance management system where I hold deputy national commissioners accountable for this, because it's their environment, especially when it comes to accountability for budget. So that one gap has been that a divisional commissioner is accounting directly to me, and the deputy national commissioner was out of the chain, yet the performance agreement is signed otherwise. But when we also then go down, we then say, if there's non-performance, consequence management has to be taken, then it has to start where the responsibility starts, right up to that particular level. Then there's also a discovery that we made, the optimal utilization of systems, because most of the information that's supposed to be captured here is touching on the systems. And what came out is that the optimal utilization of systems is not part of accountability in terms of the performance management system. And that's one other instruction I have issued, that let each and every environment, all managers, all levels, let them account for optimal utilization of systems, so that we all monitor the systems and make sure that those who are supposed to capture information, they capture it correctly. Then we had what we call the combined assurance approach, which I think is one area that has helped us previously to avoid qualified audit. I think this process collapsed in the organization, and we also discussed it with the audit. I have issued an instruction for its immediate reinstatement, because then we have got more capacity for monitoring and make sure that things happen down there. Then the risk management and the internal control framework that is spoken about has actually caused us more harm. And one of the actions we have taken was a total review of the risk management plan and align it to this particular process, so that, because a repeat audit is actually a risk to the organization, and it's more risky if it continues. But as an accounting officer, I have declared a repeat misconduct, a repeat audit and misconduct. And it will remain like that. in terms of the disciplinary code. Then, finally, as an organization, we haven't also all mastered the expeditious process correctly. So, but we've also spoken to HR and gave a directive that let us capacitate everyone to initiate the expeditious process. Because if people do not comply deliberately, so I think the expeditious process will help us to fast track the disciplinary processes. Otherwise, we then see it with suspensions, as it has already been spoken. But the previous root cause analysis, obviously, I'm sure the audit committee will talk to it. I'm just talking to a situation that caused us this. Then others, they also then require training. And Chair, that is actually the turnaround approach in terms of this particular process. And I've given further instructions to say, if we receive an audit, the audit action plans must be finalized within 3 months, or else we must get a full explanation why everything is not corrected within that 3 months. And we also need to be closing those particular reports. Then, from the other questions, I'll just take the strategic part, and I will also give the opportunity to the members to be able to respond. One of them is the public works issue. There's a suggestion that we should engage with public works. Our in terms of our approach, we've asked the minister, but we also want to ask the committee for support. I think this matter requires a policy review. We've tried it for years. It doesn't work, and it doesn't help us. And the root cause there is that a security function is sitting in a department that doesn't have capacity to handle security. And that's the root cause. And the security issues, they come at all time with agents. And that sense of agents, you can't, that is instilled in that particular department. As I'm speaking now, we've got 95 leased police stations. Yes. And those particular police stations, we must deal with the security of the police stations. So then there's three parties. There's us, we use the police station. There's public where they entered into an agreement. Then there's a lease owner. Then we've done physical security assessment. Who implement the security installation? Yet police are killed in the same police station. So it's a policy issue. I want to put it like that. And I'm calling for the support of the committee. We've touched it with the minister. But if policy doesn't change, now I suspect we're going to continue for a long time with this particular problem. The members who fail to disclose contracts, I can give that to General Wayne.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, a very good morning. In terms of members who have failed to disclose contracts, they are dealt with in terms of the discipline regulation of 2016, which were revised to include the expeditious process once we get to know about it. We work very closely with our internal audit that conducts the forensic investigation, and once they are done with that part, and then we ensure that the disciplinary process kicks in. In our presentation, we are also making visible in slide 52 where members were picked up in terms of the Auditor General's report. Their names were picked up,
where they were found to have been involved in some kind of businesses, and they were making visible the steps which were taken against them. And also our approach is that every case will be dealt with in terms of its own merits. And also we also follow in the principles of discipline, where discipline is intended to be progressive, to correct behavior. However, I want to emphasize that every case will be dealt with in terms of its own merits, where the situation will necessitate a dismissal, a member will get dismissed in line with the discipline regulation.
Thank you, General. Just a moment, a follow-up on Ombele.
Thank you, Chair. If I may ask just a quick follow-up to Lieutenant General Wedia. In terms of the disciplinary process and the delays that sometimes often happen, is it primarily the case, and I'm speaking here from subjective experience of my time in government a few years back, is it primarily the case that the delays come from the difficulties in convening the panel, because we have to, you know, source officials who will be objective and not linked to either party, and therefore having to convene that panel and coordinating diaries tends to be a challenge so you can actually have the hearing? Or does the challenge lie elsewhere? Is it a different kind of challenge with having those expedited DC processes?
Thanks. I want to agree with Honorable Mbele to say yes, there will be instances where a coordination of diaries in respect of members that are charged, and in particular cases where functionaries will have been from external. We at times encounter delays resulting from that. However, most of the cases will be finalized in time, especially where we are utilizing internal functionaries. We also ensured that the discipline management is a priority within the organization. It is in the APP. Our turnaround time is 60 days. And we measure ourselves in terms of this. In a number of cases where we have encountered delays, will be those cases where top management will have been involved and we utilize external people. I must say, because it's a situation of a member having to lose a job, there will be all tactics played from the defense to ensure that we don't finalize the case. However, we are continuously ensuring that we engage those functionaries to ensure that they do finalize the case. I must say it's not an easy one, because in doing whatever, we still have to observe the Labor Relations Act. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Can we move to the other question? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Chair, did we confirm that the staff has a computerized register, and it is reliable, and this includes the capturing of network assets? There will only be a difference with the recent procurement that took place where assets were acquired but not linked to the register. And such assets, I think, are under investigation. Then, measuring the content of confiscated liquor, General Jaffer and General Matamura, take your part.
Thanks, Commissioner, Chairperson and members. With regard to the measurement of liquor, currently in the past we had a problem as to if the bottle is not full. Currently, the program has been amended to accommodate be it a quarter or half. So that problem has been now been resolved. And with regard to the question on by Honorable Bella on does the capturing when members have worked on the open. The operational members, they bring whatever, they feed pizza or drugs. The capturing is done by SAP 13 Plus. Most probably, in most cases, there will be a PSA, yes, a clinical person who will do the capturing. It is not the operational member that is on the field that does the capturing in itself, but it's done by either a PSA or in some station as a staff member. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Chair, the steps taken against officials who incurred regular expedition should have explained it earlier on. We have now linked the financial misconduct together with the disciplinary code and in which your provisions of the Public Finance Management Act talk to the disciplinary conduct.
All right,
I'm going to
Absolutely, in relation to that answer, and I heard you say a moment ago you've linked the two, how much was taken, missing, or irregularly spent, and the disciplinary. So in terms of, let's look at irregular expenditure, the last cycle there was 20.3 million in irregular expenditure. So in terms of the disciplinary processes that follow, how much of that have you recovered?
Right, thank you, National Commissioner and team, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's just at the present moment I cannot give accurate figures, but if there's a need we can make them available in a report. But the principle is once there's irregular expenditure, I think Section 34 of the Public Finance Management Act prescribes you must start a process, then escalate it to Section 81, then you get into the disciplinary code. And I have also issued the instruction that in all such cases, let us also still apply the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. Some of the processes might not have been finalized. But I think my instruction is ending at that. So, Chair, we can make the report available, but part of this report, they are under investigation. And that's where we might have limitations also, but we can provide. The TMS head acting has just joined the minister in the CILEP committee. Oh, he's back? Oh, okay. Thank you for coming back. Chair, the pocketbooks, I will further give the vice general and general doctor.
My response to the pocketbook, the question relates to whether the effectiveness of the pocketbook is being monitored. With the current implementation plan for the repeat finding on the budget, we are looking at the design of the pocketbook specifically to complement the effectiveness. Currently, the pocketbook is only clean. It doesn't make provision for IR number, doesn't make provision for the technical indicator description, actually. So we're trying to work into the design to give the effectiveness they are. We are currently looking at the effectiveness. We have reported on almost 500 disciplinary cases that have been taken. So in the new process, also our new action plan, we would do a gap analysis on the disciplinary cases to really get to the root cause, to see whether it is something about writing skills, something about knowledge, and then we'll come up with the effective action plan.
But General, no station commander was disciplined for that?
The members who did not comply with the instructions, those members are disciplined. Honorable Chair.
But no station commander. That what you say.
Oh, yeah. Honorable Chair, I've spoken about the discipline value chain.
Mm.
In actual fact, where members did not comply, and the matter could have come up here. Once it comes up here, it becomes a national issue. And it's national, then I said we must take action even against the leader. So there will still be action taken against the station commanders.
But, I mean, the fact is there's no action has been taken until today. I mean, that's the dilemma. unless there is an onus on that station commander to perform, you will discipline 1,000 in the next cycle. But they must be considered. I mean, that is the reality. Otherwise, you're not going to have results. Thank you.
Chair, we accept it as a shortcoming, and we are going to address it. I'm sure by the next time we come here, we'll prove that that action is being taken against managers for failing to fulfill their responsibility. But it will also flow from the performance management system, where it is clear what are they accountable for. Chair, the DNA shortage, I'll give it to General Command. Or maybe, okay, you can go. Maybe first, Chair, I must say, I personally gave an instruction to the team, the supply chain headed by Deputy National Commissioner General Zuma, and then General Zumane and Forensic, and the instruction was clear, let us obtain the VNA kit, either by means of a formal contract or quotation, just to make sure that the supply is fine at the station. The feedback that I got was that they obtained the minimum for all police stations and then to be functional. Up to this far, I haven't received any report about any complaints, but the process is still continuing because they need to get to the right specifications.
Yeah, I think thank you, General. I think the report we got last week is that in September the process will be finalized, the new process, but apparently also nice. But let's get the... General, you're welcome. Good morning.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members. indeed, Chair, we, Supply Chain Management and General Magadela and the team, they are working on the process. The big committee should be sitting now in September. But in the meantime, we have to devise some means to try to make sure that the particularly the SCS related, your forensic cases where you need your huge cases where you need a forensic report, that's where we apply our level best to make sure that those cases are not being compromised. I think the redistribution also plan is in place to make sure that those stations that are heavy, we can also share with the others. We're trying to make sure that we are not losing cases because of this. And also we are talking to our prosecutors as well, just to bear with us in relation to those outstanding reports that are waiting the issue of the DN-related cases, etc. But I think after the process has been finalized and the tender has been given, everything will be fine again. But I think we're watching particularly those cases that are very key, that are major in nature, that we should not lose them.
Thank you. The other responses, General?
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Consequence management not seen. I think I'm not going to take a defensive approach on this one. I accept the committee wanna see action. And I think we promised the action. Next time we're gonna be on top of this. But one of the things that we just wanna change here, when discipline is taken, people are suspended. It's also not that very much visible, especially if they get suspended for a longer time. My direction to HR has been, let us master the expeditious process, and so that we just get a short way of concluding the discipline. So we are also working on that. So we'll give you a better report next time. Then the system feeder, Police Act and PSA, General Matamula has answered it. Then what happened to the previous root cause analysis? I gave it from my own perspective. I'm not sure whether the audit committee want to relate to it, with your permission, Chair. I think there was a question, what happened to the previous root cause analysis?
Thank you, General. Mr. Pieter.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chairman Sikoli. I think what the audit committee meant by the specific reference was that when we consider the action plans of the department following on the audit findings of the internal audit and the audit general findings, one needs to evaluate whether the action plan really talks to the problem. And before you can do that, you need to have a root cause analysis. And often we find a report back from management to say non-compliance. That doesn't mean much if you have to go and follow up in terms of a specific action plan. So what we've asked the department to do, and from their own risk assessment management, you need to determine, was there a specific skill shortage, in which case you have to upskill or multi-skill? Is your policies and your instructions very clear, or is it outdated, whereby you'll have to update your policies and your procedures? Then also, is it a leadership problem? Was there not proper supervision in terms of that specific action? And then, lastly, is it purely misconduct? And in that case, then you have to have a proper consequent management process. So, by clearly just saying it is a non-compliance with a specific treasury regulation or a policy document, all the fear frame, it doesn't say much. You must determine what was the reason behind that non-compliance. And I think the department has now started, by way of their risk management process, to clearly indicate what root cause analysis is all about and clearly investigate all of those non-compliance issues.
Thank you, Mr. Meeran. The National Commissioner, you can proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The question of the SSL Administration Performance Indicator, General Ravi, will respond to it.
Chair, the technical indicator description that talks to the time that it takes to process the case exhibits at FSL, they measure the time in working days. Unfortunately, the system, the FSL administration system, was never designed to measure progress in terms of working days. It has always been calculated as calendar days. Now, at the time that we agreed with HSA that what we will do 2 years ago is that we agreed that 28 working days, as it is reflected in the TID, equals to 35 calendar days that can be processed by the system. So at the end of the day, the two were basically not compatible, the way that we wanted to measure it and the way that the system could measure it. Now, to bridge the gap, we either had to change the technical indicator description, or we had to make system design, or we had to redesign the system to calculate for the method in terms of working days. Now, the latter is not always the solution because it adds some complexities to the system. Your working days, the days of a month that falls on a weekend, and your public holidays, and all those factors that needs to be taken into consideration, you have to do it by means of system design then. So the easier option is then to go back to measure your performance in terms of calendar days. Now, we've implemented that in the latest APP to move away from trying to do it in working days and rather measure it in terms of calendar days. So it's basically, in essence, the problem was the system could not do what we wanted to do in terms of the technical indicator description.
General Story.
Thanks very much, Chair. The tenders above 500,000 said there has not been a recurrence. But I have instructed internal audit to conduct an audit on it. They worked on it and it didn't progress. And then upon finalization, they will also give us a report. I can only shortly say it's a matter now, which is a priority for audit. Then the capacity at police stations, including the recruitment approach, I think we want to welcome the input, firstly, and say from a recruitment perspective, we will be looking at it. But from my side, I indicated, Honourable Chair, that the capacity at the police station will currently be addressing it through rationalization and as well as the training and development strategy, where we just want to sustain the skills. And maybe also for further information of the committee, because security is also a bit of a worry. I have made a pronouncement last week in the strategic plan that the basic training is now going to take the TRT standard as from the next intake, so that we increase the level of retaliation of police at individual level at the police stations.
General, just a moment, I'll check. Follow up.
Well, thank you, Chair. Commissioner, to the Chair, I think you've conceded and accepted that there are serious challenges on the ground in police station. And I just wanted to know, what are the chances, now that you've identified the need of problem, of identifying a team of specialist concepts with the necessary capacity to go and live in station by station for a period of time, and start from the ground and identify all the weaknesses in the journey and put it, in other words, I'm asking for putting each station, starting from those worst affected, under management, so that you can identify and call the communities to come in and tell us what the problem is. Identify the culprits and deal with it hands-on. Correct that station and then move to the next one. I know there's going to be challenges with that, but it seems to me it's the only way we're going to get our house in order. Thank you.
Right, thanks for that input. General, you can continue. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Chair, I would say I welcome it as an input, and as the Honourable Member has indicated, it's not easy, but they have also been shown the plan, the new plan to police station by General Jaffa. She is actually coming up with a reversible general. So we'll look at whether we can be able to align it. It's a great input. The passion and resource utilization state vehicles everywhere. I think here we're not only reliable on our monitoring measures. I think we'll be operationalizing the community policing strategy now in September. We are also relying on the communities to work together with us, because I'm also throwing it to them to say, these are your vehicles, police cannot abuse them. If they abuse them, report to us, let us take action. So I think there's going to be a massive community mobilization that is also speaking to this. And further to that, we will be toughening the disciplinary code in case there's any abuse of vehicles. But with the rationalization, we're not only rationalizing the personnel, but also resources, including the effective management of those resources. The last question was about the paralysis, what led to the paralysis. I think from the root cause analysis right up to what I have mentioned and the revival of quite a lot of other interventions like your risk management. I think we're just trying now to repair the paralysis so that we make sure that this situation does not repeat it again. And again, Chair, I would like to apologize for this situation that has been created. We will still live by arrested rules and keep hope as our working group. And from Helen Kale again, just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, it became a butterfly. Thank you, Chair.
Right, can we maybe move to the presentation on the AG financials as well as this police safety one? Members can still, of course, raise issues that was under scrutiny during this session. I just want to maybe a question to the National Commissioner. I don't want to individualize members who's under disciplinary, but the principle of your Deputy National Commissioners, your Divisional Commissioners serving on other boards or other institutions, it came sharply up in the case of your CFO, because it poses certain risks. I mean, if we listen to the presentation of the Audit Committee and the AG, if there's not 100% commitment on SAP's work and the core function, especially at chief director and up level, you ran the risk of divided tension and core functions, and I don't want to indicate other divisions today in this forum, but it's a risk for the organization. I just want to get your sense. Going forward, will there be further restrictions on your top management serving also on boards and other, let's say, roles outside the police sector? Not that we want to discount it, of course, development and others, it's important, but I just want to hear you on that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm sure it's my own approach, my own view, and how I see it. I think given the nature of the police work and given the nature of the concerns that are raised by communities and how much they prioritize their safety, as members of the police, we cannot afford to have a dual approach in trying to fight crime, be engaged in the one area and in the other area, because it's a divided attention, that is number one. But number two, it's a conflict of interest, because some of the things that we do outside, they may be in conflict with what we're doing here, or people start to come ask us favors from those particular environments. So my view, and anyway from the prescript's point of view, they are not allowed to do it until they are so authorized. And from my own perspective, and under these circumstances, trying to get the organization right, I'm not going to allow it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Honourable Mabija, for all.
On a journey to a safer South Africa, creating a safe and secure crime-free environment that is conducive for social and economic stability, supporting a better life for all. Now, my question is, with the current state of border around the country, do you believe that what I'm saying on the matches the possibility of winning, of making that paragraph leave effective? If the question is yes, expatiate on that. If not, also expatiate on that. And I'd like to know if it's no. Did you ever approach a public work to see that you can make your dream come true? Secondly, according to how I see things going on, NEDCOM, you are busy using the crisis intervention management. When something happens, you run there. When this happens, you run there. Do you think you are going to accomplish that mission to put there on a journey to whatever, wherever? Please. I just put me on a comfort zone of understanding precisely that thing as the current situation.
Yeah, thank you, Member. We'll allow the National Commissioner to react after this two briefings. So thank you very, very much, Member. Let's go to those other two presentations. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. In the chairperson, I'll respond to the question later. So
yes.
Our next presentation will be done by the Acting CFO, General Nelson.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. General Nelson, you're welcome.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The presentation will deal with the progress with regards to the previous audit findings that was in terms of the 2016-17 financial year, the annual financial statements being audited from during the 2017 audit process. I will give an indication with regards to the findings, then just some background, the action plan to address the findings, and then also the latest progress. Now, chairperson, essentially the finding dealt with the network and hosting related equipment procured by SAC and SICTA that acted on behalf of the department, and then the finding concluded that the department did not close in the financial statement of the police service the specific network and hosting at the single disclosure requirement. So then if we go to the background, essentially, and I will just quickly refer to that just to refresh your mind as we presented last year, that with the establishment of SICTA, all the facts and network hosting related assets were transferred as per the National Treasury's approval to SICTA in terms of the establishment, and then SAC continued to report on the end user equipment, and we will continue to do that. Part of the room inventory, part of the movable government property, so that will continue. And then the AG, in terms of that finding, indicated that irrespective of these arrangements contained in the business agreement, service level agreement, they were of the opinion that the Department of Police should disclose these network related assets. Then SICTA took ownership of these equipment transfers upon inception, as well as the assets then procured. So during 14, 15, 16, 17, and 17, 18 financial years, SAC then procured via SICTA contract these network assets, and then they were then installed by SICTA, and they then, in terms of their management processes, then facilitated the process. Then in 2006, SICTA decided to remove these assets from their financial statements. And then subsequently, the assets were still procured by them, but it was not put on their asset register. And during the last three financial years, once approved and purchased, procured via SICTA, SAC paid them, and it was not accounted for. So during an audit performed by the AG at SICTA in 2016-17, they raised the issue of ownership of this equipment with SICTA in February 2017. So then in February 2017, there was an engagement, and then it was identified that these assets are nowhere accounted for. And then subsequent to the audit finding, the department then initiated the process immediately, where then, let's just see the next slide, we can go to the next slide, so we'll check this today. Now the action plan to address the finding then, once we appeared before the committee, even before that, once we, during the audit process, the department compiled a detailed action plan to resolve this finding. It was specific steps in order to address this particular issue, and it was dealt with in three. The whole project was divided into three broad stages. It, essentially, in terms of risk mitigation, one should remember a network and hosting infrastructure comprises thousands of components and subcomponents. So then the main issue was to identify the three categories. First of all, categories relating to the switching centers, then the sites with asset quantities of 100 and above, and the last one, the sites with assets below 100 items. Now that was essentially to deal with the verification and the identification of these sites. Now, what is of importance to note? All these network and hosting systems run on a network. If you look at that system at the back there, you will find the green light flashing there. It means that these systems in that room link to a server box. And they are active there, and they can be updated. So that for software to identify these assets on the network. And that was the process. So SICTA has got two systems essentially. It's the network management system, and then the action request for server system. The action request for service system, not one of them essentially are network and hosting asset registers, but what we then done was to take the network management system, which is a system nationally for all departments,
to identify these assets essentially from a remote, from a central point of location, and then also to look at the actual request for service, where the maintenance schedules in terms of asset life cycle have been managed. So from that perspective then, we were in a position then to link the two systems in order to identify and stratify these big sites. Then so there was identification, and the whole purpose of this process was to ensure completeness. Remember these assets, and you'll see it's more than 73,000 assets that we identified since August last year until 31 May that we submitted the asset register and the disclosure of 1.7 billion rand. So then these assets were then physically verified, and in addition this project plan essentially comprises SAPS and CETA and the internal order of CETA, internal audit of CETA. In addition to that, in order to further enhance the controls in terms of ensuring completeness and accuracy, CETA went out on a contract and contracted CSWEB, a company that independently went and verified these assets and produced a report. In fact, the chairperson of the project steering committee is also from CSWE, an independent contractor that understands auditing processes. He's was with the auditor general. He's the chairperson of other audit committees in order to ensure the necessary controls in terms of the compliance framework, completeness, reliability are in place. On the next slide, chairperson, we then performed the physical verification of these, and they were then captured and signed off as we went along with the process. And apart from the physical asset verification, we also had to do the value attachment to these assets. Remember, these assets from 1999, some of them are very old, and we had to go through a specific process, and we also engaged National Treasury to get confirmation in terms of the valuation of these assets. We went as far as approaching the original equipment manufacturers to say this particular switch or series model, what would be a fair value of these in those instances where supporting documentation was not available anymore. On the next slide, chairperson, just to show, and also to take note that this project management steering committee met on a weekly basis. Irrespective, there were minutes taken, the process was documented, and as we went along, we had also an individual contracted by CETA to develop a process document. Asset verification process document where the technical details were then documented from the inception of the project until May when we concluded and were in a position then to produce the asset register. So these steering committees were very of importance, and also with the engagement with the Auditor General at our finance steering committee meetings, we updated them with the project plan and developments in terms of the compilation of the register. Then you will also recall the question might ask, why should SAPS disclose these assets? Now, essentially in terms of the business agreement and the subsequent service level agreement, the CETA business model and the decision in terms of the business model that will then determine the ownership of these assets were not concluded before 31 March for the previous financial, the current financial, previous financial year, apologies, yeah. So that one needs to still to unfold. Now, chairperson, the latest progress on 31 May, we submitted the financial statements together with the asset register for all network and hosting equipment to the department. When we approached the accountant general with our framework, with our methodology, with our draft asset register, they were surprised that the department were in a position to identify and produce this register that complies to the minimum requirements as per the National Treasury Accounting Manual for Department, and also in terms of the modified cash standard to comply with the disclosure requirements in terms of this asset register. They expected that the department would approach the accountant general for an exemption for disclosure in this financial year. So they, in terms of the process, as explained to them, we then, as a department, decided based on the assessments performed that this register and the disclosure will then provide for reasonable assurance that all network nursing equipment has been properly accounted for. So the register comprised 73,000 assets, 1.7 billion rand, and it was introduced to the Auditor General, and several meetings in terms of the process. Due to the complexity of this network infrastructure, we engaged them, and even business executive and the senior manager from the HSA also attended our meetings when opportunity was provided to them to engage then the technical people in order to, on the next slide, we can summarize then also the process documents. We have a detailed asset verification project plan chairperson and the execution as was presented to this committee in October last year. The exact project plan was executed according to time frames. We had to make certain adjustments due to the complexities as it unfolded, but we were in a position to produce the register as of 31 March. The asset verification process document, the detailed document, was also provided to the Auditor General to give perspective in terms of the whole process that unfolded for the identification, valuation, disclosure requirements, component standardization, subcomponents, and serial numbers, with numbers, etc. And then, in order to support the disclosure requirements, the department compiled a framework that accompanied the annual financial statements approved by the accounting officers to indicate to the Auditor General that this register produced comprises of the following framework and elements of this register and that it complies to the minimum requirements. Then HA raised a finding during the audit in terms of completeness of the register, and 12 cases out of the population were then presented to the department, and one can summarize them on a very high level. Essentially, the issue is with regard to the components, subcomponents of a bigger asset. If one looks at the system in the corner there, each one of those are components or subcomponents of the bigger asset. On the next slide, during the audit, it then became evident from the interaction with the Auditor General that the impression existed and still exists that it's an ongoing process and that the register is incomplete. It was indicated that any asset register, I mean, there are additions, there are disposals, there are movements and relocations, etc. And those all require updating of systems and registers as we move. The next slide. The essence is that the reporting requirements at a certain given point in time require from the department to produce then an asset register at a specific date and time. And the fact that updates on the one system that is police-specific, the action request for service system, are effected does not necessarily implicate incompleteness. It was emphasized the importance to note the continuous update, and irrespective of the efforts by the department to resolve, the following opinion is included in the draft audit report. As we sit here, it's a draft opinion, where the Auditor General is saying, I was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence to substantiate that immovable tangible capital assets were completely disclosed. The system that produced the register were not reliable, and the process compiling the register was still ongoing at the date of my report, and therefore they are of the opinion that they are not able to determine whether adjustments were necessary to restate in the financial statements. Just to summarize then in terms of the opinion, the opinion refers to the reliance on systems, And we've indicated the two systems, actual request and the network management system generic for all departments really, that was used, and the outcome of the analysis still requested in order to give an indication of the evidence produced in order to come to such a conclusion at that point in time. And then no finding was raised in order to allow for comments by CITA of the custodian of the system an opportunity to address that. So from that, CITA couldn't not be allowed to comment on that. And then one of the key issues kept referring to is the reliable of those systems, and we're saying critically both systems utilized have the necessary controls to produce a reliable list of assets, although the ARS action request for service as it stands today is vastly different from the register as on 31 March. It's a live system being updated. And then on the last slide on this particular matter, Chairperson, the verification tool, essentially the network management system to detect any system on the system, will demonstrate completeness in terms of the mother-child relationship of these particular assets. And we acknowledge, Chairperson, with the last bullet there, in a project like this, the risk of completeness will always exist. However, it's been compensated on a materiality basis as well, where the sites of the two remaining provinces selected where the asset count was between 15 and 100 per the ARS system, the risk of completeness is mitigated to less than materiality from the department's perspective. And we are engaging the corporate executive on Friday with this draft opinion, Chairperson, and we trust that we can resolve this finding. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, General Nelson. National Commissioner, we can go to the station safety matter.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Major General Ravi will continue with the presentation. Thank you.
Touch on the legal opinion that relates to the wearing of body cams, and then we will brief the committee on the objectives that are associated with the project to improve safety at our police stations. We will deal with the analysis of current situation at police stations, emergency security measures, the integrated project plan, the critical success factors, as well as the way forward and conclusion. As far as the background is concerned, touching first on the standards set by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, where they indicate to effectively combat crime, you need at least a police population ratio of one police officer to 220 people. Now, currently in South Africa, we have one police officer for every 394 residents. That is as per our annual report for 2016-17. But if one looks at the Statistics South Africa, the mid-year population report that was published in July 2018, the current population estimate is standing at 57 million. Now, in addition to that, taking into account the community-based service statistics that we have, approximately 11 million foreign nationals in South Africa that is not necessarily included in the population count, that brings us to a total of 68 million, and that equates to one police officer for every 579 residents. Now, if we take into account the current spate of attacks on police stations, that is a result of criminal activities, activities during protest action, riots, attacks, and unnatural deaths. This needs to be regarded as a threat to the stability of our country. Now, both the Minister of Police, the National Commissioner, and the top management of the South African Police Service have prioritized the safety and well-being of our members as one of the priorities of SAPS. If you take into account the previous report of the Portfolio Committee, two recommendations were made by the committee One is that CCTV cameras are installed in all community service centers at all our police stations, and that the SAPs implement body-worn cameras for frontline service delivery members. Now, if we once again take into account the recent number of attacks that have taken place, it necessitated the implementation of an urgent intervention to address the security situation at our police stations to prevent any further loss of life or damage to police property. Just touching on the legal opinion, and I would like to read this verbatim as it is there because it is important for the purpose of understanding. The current provisions of the Regulation of Interception of Communication Related Information Act prohibit the recording of communications of another person by a law enforcement officer unless there are reasonable grounds to believe that interception is necessary on a ground that a serious offence has been or is being or will probably be committed, or the person who is being intercepted gave prior consent in writing to the interception. The Act regulates both visual as well as sound footage. Ordinary crimes or engagements on street level or during unrest situation will not necessarily qualify as a serious offence defined by the Act. Interception of especially oral communication by means of a recorder which is attached to a body-worn camera may therefore be unlawful if the offence or engagement which is recorded does not qualify as a serious offence, or the offence or engagement is recorded without written consent of the intercepted person or occurs in a private place. This legal opinion was subsequently submitted to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and they agreed with the original opinion that the Act prohibits the use of body-worn cameras during crime prevention and investigation. Now, based on that, SAPS requested an amendment of the Act on an urgent basis so that we can comply with the recommendations that have been made by Parliament. Now, taking into account the time-consuming processes to do this, they further recommend that the Department rather effect an amendment to the Cyber Security and Cybercrimes Bill, waged and inserted an amendment to the Regulation of Interception of Communication Related Information Act 2002. Now, an integrated project plan has been compiled, Honourable Chair, to address the current situation and specific focus on the safety of our police stations. And the objectives of the project team is to advise and implement emergency safety security standards at all identified police stations, to mitigate police safety risks when they are identified, to ensure that we have at all times sufficient personnel on duty per shift at our police stations, and to implement preventative measures to minimize attacks on police stations and SAPS and police at police stations. That includes the development and implementation of the appropriate standard operating procedures. It is also one of the objectives to focus on the operational readiness of our members and to also ensure that the police personnel working at police stations are properly equipped. Now, in terms of the analysis of the current situation, Honourable Chair, we've taken into account a number of factors to determine what the current status is with reference to perimeter fencing, lights, gates, whether police stations have access to secured entrances, guardhouses, and whether we have the appropriate number of members on duty. Honourable Chair, we've distributed a presentation on slide 13, which I'm going to skip. We are of the opinion that making that visible will compromise the security situation, and would like to request that it be treated as such. Now, as far as the minimum security standards for safety at police stations are concerned, given the objectives associated with the project, it will focus specifically on the perimeter security, the fencing around police station, elimination your lighting around police stations, access control, guard housing, burglar proofing, CCTV, or the deployment of CCTV in operational areas, and also the installation and activation of panic alarm systems that will be linked to our OCC offices. Now, the integration of the project in key activities, as you will note on the slide, all the change will be addressed in two phases. The first phase will stretch from 16 August until 31 March 2019. The second phase will be from 1 April 2019 to 31 March 2024. Now, first of all, it will focus on the prioritization of specific police stations where the minimum security standards that are not necessarily technology needs to be upgraded. That includes your fencing, your lockable gates as far as vehicles and pedestrians are concerned, as well as the guardhouses. Then also the addressing the situation at police stations where we have less than 4 members on duty. We've identified a total of 532 police stations, and for the purpose of that we can utilize 5,841 posts that are currently vacant. As the National Commissioner already indicated, he has also prioritized the inclusion of TRT training in our basic training of members. And as far as technology are concerned, the process for the appointment of a panel of suppliers for CCTV and access and control has already been initiated. And for the multi-year or the MTSF, we are talking about other minimum standards that are not necessarily technology, CCTV and panic alarms. The critical success factor that has been identified for the addressing the current situation is the recruitment of the personnel at entry level to fill the gaps there where it has been identified. The approval of a resource plan that includes the wider spectrum of physical and financial and human resources for the purpose of implementing the measures that has been identified. The authorization by Public Works to do the necessary security upgrades at non-devolved stations. And we've also, currently the procurement of these services is done under the urgency delegation to ensure that it's done within a reasonable time. And then also the approval of the Cyber Act for the implementation of body-worn cameras, as we discussed when we dealt with the legal opinion. The way forward, Honourable Chair, the Provincial Commissioner has been tasked to identify police stations and prioritise police stations where immediate measures need to be implemented. We've already indicated that this will be dealt as a phased approach to upgrade at an identified police stations. The bid and tender processes will be initiated to make sure that we include or that we address the procurement as it has been identified to upgrade the security situation. The staffing plan that will be compiled to address the shortage of personnel. We've already finalized the specification of CCTV cameras for installation at our police stations, and then the rollout of the body-worn cameras will be done as soon as we have dealt with the legal matters that has already been addressed. Now, in conclusion, Honourable Chair, it's important to note that the management of the South African Police Service is committed to ensure the safety of all our members and working at police stations, including detainees, the public, and also committed to prevent further damage to property. We are committed to ensure that police stations are capacitated to eliminate the risks, as we've already referred to, and then also the development of standard operating procedures for the attacks on police stations, and to ensure that our members deployed at police stations are operational ready in terms of the necessary training requirements. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we will now take questions on all these subjects and also the responses. The first two from my side, then I'll go to Honourable Mabija and Honourable Mshlongo. Yeah, maybe the one issue, the issue of shortage of staff and the police population that I think it's a reality. But again, my question is, and it's not included in your presentation, in May, SAPS management indicated to us that there's currently 11,000 reservists in the country. Now, from a practical point of view, on a weekend, and some of our members visited these stations this last few weeks, and we're going to continue with those surprise visits, it's quite clear you've got, say, 3 or 4 members inside at many of the stations, but the dilemma is, and the members, they are quite honest with that, and the shift commanders, the number of vehicles that can be used now for visible policing and patrols during the weekend is now curtailed, because the members must be in the stations. So that's a dilemma. So how are we going to ensure, with a minimum member in the stations, that also visible policing and patrols are still continuing? Because some indicated to me the number of patrols has been curtailed because there are not enough members in the station during those hours. So that's going to have a huge impact on visible policing and patrols and safety of the public on the weekend. So we need a solution with regard to that. And then the issue of reservists. Shouldn't we give much more energy and focus on that? It's only 11,000 in May. I mean, if your reservists, especially on weekends and peak hours, can be in the stations, our members must be out there to patrol and support the community. So I'm just worried about that. Let's go to Honourable Mabija.
Thank you, Chair.
meeting to four or less members per seat. What does that mean, four or less? I don't really understand precisely what is meant on that less. It means even minus zero or what, something like that. So may you please make it clear for me to understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Omar Bija. Omar Mushlongu?
No, that's it. On the question of presentation made on progress with the previous audit findings, I sympathize with you, General, because it means that you are moving like a beheaded chicken in this room. Now, this committee is an oversight organ of Parliament. CETA is not above us. Is CETA a problem according to you? Yeah. Because as people who are managing all these things, these gadgets that you are using, and they need to know that so many gadgets have been allocated to South African police with an aim of achieving this, and CETA as well must actually then be able, in pace with the development of technology, to say by such a time such gadgets will be updated. We need to be looking on the development of new in order to be able to counter this. Secondly, you as police, you might not have that capacity because you are not technicians. It's like yours is just to enforce what can you say, compliance with the laws of the country. Now, if CETA is giving you a problem on this, you see, I liked that input made by the gentleman. I don't know if it's from, whether it's from AG's office or whatever. The toolkit, so that we can be able to identify where is the break of the chain. Because if CETA is just solely there to indulge in what appeared in SCOBA, Parliament has got an obligation. We cannot have a government agency that is just used to plunder state resources without any kind of an output that is actually then taking the nation forward to live up to the challenges of the current state. Now, that is why then I liked that input to say, from your part, have you developed your own toolkit to say internally as police, in terms of the verification of the assets, this is the tool that we are actually then having, so that we can then be able to say to other committees responsible for the existence of CETA, CETA is actually committing crime, because we need you as police even to arrest these people, even only if they are just there to milk the state. Not just to say that people will be disciplined when people are just indulging in pure criminal activities. Because stealing from the state coffers is just pure criminality. You don't need to be taken into discipline. Maybe you can be disciplined while you are there in that orange uniform center, rather than just allowing criminals to actually then loot things that are supposed to help US police, then we just simply say, why is CETA? Have you developed the toolkit? So that we can then be able to absolve you from this particular problem. I am raising that, Chairperson, because if I look, I don't know what page this is, you know, this question of meetings. Yours is not to hold meetings. Yours is to monitor the toolkit, whether the tool is working or not. If it is not working, who is actually breaking the chain? And that person must be held accountable. Because these meetings, I can tell you, that's where even rogues within you will exploit these meetings for their own benefit. Because it is just meeting. No toolkit. You are managers, you need to manage the tool. Whether the tool is working or needs to be updated, that's all. I just wanted to raise that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Shlomo. Honourable Kodabana.
Thank you. Two questions from me. Firstly, what on earth got into the CETA that they thought they could just remove the SAPS assets from the system in 2006? I mean, did they... I'm speechless to see that. R1 billion worth of assets, I suppose at that stage it was about that value, simply removed from their books. Was someone disciplined or had they been promoted? I'm fascinated that they could think they could do such a thing, landed you with such an issue. Secondly, the verification of assets. You've now gone around, you've verified all the assets. How much of the network infrastructure is missing? How much has been stolen? How much has disappeared? What value of stuff has disappeared? Because I will bet my bottom dollar that once it was off anybody's books, the looting began. I mean, now we sit with the Auditor General unable to obtain sufficient evidence to substantiate. Well, I'm guessing that a good part of it has gone into people's pockets. So I'd like to know about that, and if you are anywhere near arresting anyone, finding anyone, catching anyone, jailing anyone, or again, are we just looking at people who are going to be let loose and they get promoted up the ranks? Secondly, you know, thieves are using our SAP stations as firearm ATMs. So now we see what you've come up with, and I was quite impressed at the beginning until I saw Public Works have to do it. Seriously. We sat in this committee for how many years? Public Works lets the SAPs down over and over and over. They just don't work. We go to stations where, I just told you about a station where they came and knocked down all the walls and the contractor stole all the money and disappeared 2 years ago. They have no walls. They have no security. Every station I go to, in Dundee yesterday, they put in a listed building where you could literally reach in and take the filing cabinet. No burglar bars, no security gates, and they're not allowed to put them on. Oh, but Public Works will put them in that building where their lives are literally in danger. So, I mean, really, I mean, we go so far back as to when they built new stations and they put handy bolts on the inside of the door so the detainees could hang themselves. That is what Public Works does. It does not listen to what you need. It gives you what they think you need. And then it's a catastrophe every time. They couldn't use those cells for another year whilst SAPs had to work, Public Works had to work out how to change the doors so people couldn't hang themselves. That's what they do. It would take, I looked at your dates. I'm sure you heard me sniggering. I mean, you can't be serious. You think that Public Works, you would take 6 months to get an answer to about what time they'll be able to meet with you in another 6 months' time. That is my prediction of what will happen. The SAPs don't have the budget to do this themselves. Do you not have the right to do this yourself? Because if you do, for heaven's sakes, just do it. Even if you do the gates on a front door, so there's an expander gate on the front door of the station to protect people at night. Because just a start, because you're going to wait, and finally you're going to put in guardhouses. Wonderful. Natium Tetra fired all the private security people, 7 years ago. So who are you going to put there? The reservists won't go there because they want to be out on the streets doing duty. They find it exciting. That's what they do. So you're going to take trained SAPs people we've spent hundreds of thousands training and make them stand in a guardhouse. Can't do that either. So I'm quite keen to find out who you're going to put in the guardhouse. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kodabana. Honourable Muna.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your question. How can Zeta procure such assets but not disclose any assets in the system of their AFS? In slide 15, guard house, I saw those guard houses in most of the police stations. What is that house for? Because there's no security,
there's nothing, it is dirty. I don't know what's happening. In slide 17 again, 5,841 vacant posts. When are you going to fill these posts? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Muller. Honourable Muller Bachi.
Yeah, Chair, I also have want to take a bite on the cut house. This cut house, who is going to monitor it? This cut house, if it's not correctly monitored, it can be a haven for any wrong thing you can think of. My other question is on, yes, I hear you speak of all the nice things about the CCTV. My more direct question is, when do we see the implementation of CCTV at police station level? Thank you. When?
Thank you very much. Honourable Prunova.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, maybe we should get Public Works here to come and answer, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is on slide 8 about the body cameras. The requested solution, it seems that we have the regulation of the Interception of Communication Related Information Act actually prohibits that. And then it says the legal division requested the department to rather effect an amendment to the Cyber Security and Cyber Crimes Bill. Now my question is, if you amend that Cyber Crime Bill, if I can put it short, then actually you have two acts here in the end that will be in conflict with each other. Can I just get clarity on that? Does it make sense to me?
Thank you. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, maybe the first question would be on the body camera. Very surprising that we realize now that there's a problem. Very, very surprising. While I remember last week I asked a question about this, how far are we? But how does it happen that now that we realize that the two conflict with something else, at this point in time, where we should be talking about the budget, how much a good budget is to buy these things, is then that we realize there's a problem? I don't think it's acceptable. It's the legal division within each and every department. You may pick up this, very surprised. And the question of CISA and public, because in dealing with this situation, I think on two occasions we called public rights into this committee. And we said they must explain what is their problem. We went to an extent that if this person is not a security person, it's not a police officer, how does he get into building a police station if he doesn't understand how it works? Now there is, I remember at some stage I asked a question some time ago, and it was said that the end user of whatever product must be the person who comes with the specifications. Now the specifications come with public. The builder determines how a police station must be. It doesn't make any sense. Then what needs to be done? I mean, if we call public works twice, can't we get a situation whereby the National Commissioner said something about something needs to be changed? What needs to be changed? Is it the sub act? Is it some act within? Why don't you simply tell us? Because this is not practical. You can't say somebody to determine can't say to me to determine how the offices of the detectives must be structured, because I know nothing about it. And it means we are going to move in seconds. What needs to be? What do we need to do ourselves as this committee? Because that's our job. And I think the best thing is to give us a proposal and recommendation of this law and that law needs to be changed. Then we start dealing with ourselves. Otherwise, if that is not shared with, you are not going to move. And we will keep on sitting here, not solving any problem. If we could be told, or have the committee, go and shoot public works. Maybe that would be better. But if you don't tell us anything, what do you expect us to do? Say something so that we can solve this problem. Can you tell us?
Honourable Bijoy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to strongly agree with what the work of the committee said. Why? Because there isn't a meeting with a portfolio committee meeting with NAPCOM that will not mention that public works. So let's do what the work of the committee is saying. Give us so that we can intervene. Because otherwise we're really going in circles. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe just a final issue from my side. Some members related to it, the issue of the implementation, the time frame. Because the risk is here, and we saw what happened in Gobo. Now the question is, and I mean, we visit stations that's totally unsuitable, they're not safe. Now, and some of these issues only April next year, I'm worried about the urgency. Because if we're going to have another Gobo, who's going to take the responsibility? It's this management. Or in other jurisdictions, it's the minister. But somebody will have to take responsibility for that. Because we know what is the risks, we know what is the priority stations, but my concern is this time frame is not realistic in terms of the risk factors. We spoke to members, I mean, I don't want to even at this committee indicate what they told me what is happening now to the firearms, where they put the firearms. Because they're afraid at the stations, they will be attacked. So I'm worried about the urgency and the response. So I think there must be much more closer development of this proposal, because we need to look after the members. They must feel that they're in a safe environment, they can do their job, and that's my concern. So let's give an opportunity to the National Commission to speak. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Maybe, Chair, I need to start with an appreciation from the committee, because the committee holds us accountable, and when we did not do what is expected, the committee confronts us. But then again, when we have a dilemma, the committee also comes to our rescue. That's what we wanted to appreciate. And I would like to start with the question of public works. There's a policy that governs the physical security installation. And that policy has been promulgated by government and has been put under public works as the domain. Then it is that this policy that we have all the time proposed that it needs to be reviewed. And it impacts on a number of aspects, like for instance the chair says the implementation time frame. I cannot go on a time frame if I know the budget to implement what I'm putting a time frame to is not with me, I still have to go and ask Public Works whether do I have a budget to implement or to put a security fence at the police station. And if Public Works says, no, I don't, that plan can't work. Because then we come here, we commit on a plan to the committee. We go outside, Public Works says, no. Or they take it and say, no, 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 we'll look at you next year.
Yep.
So the type of support we need from the committee to confront this policy. And the honorable member has also spoken maybe nicely about it. The masters of security is us. And we better know the implications of a poor response to a security risk. And if we have to respond to a national security risk, we must ask Public Works whether shall we. And it's a national security risk, something that can collapse the country. Sometimes it's national parliament. I think national parliament, we had a physical security assessment report. That was bringing in agency for response. After 3 years, it was not yet implemented. So, more specifically, is the policy at Public Works. But SAP and the working also together with the Secretariat, we will be able to draft a proposal that explicitly talks to this particular policy, and we will make recommendations. And because of agency, check maximum 30 days, but we can work on the minimum. We will work on it, because in the process we just also need to do a bit of consultations. We need to brief the minister about it. But it's one of the biggest limitations that we have. Then, Chair, I want to come to the CETA one. There was a question that says, is CETA our problem? And I want to say, no, it is not CETA that is our problem. It is the CETA Act that is our problem. I think CETA is complying with an act which was put in their domain to administer. And therefore, it's not them that's the problem, it's the act. One, I think there's a drastic and rapid technological modus operandi advancement. Only us as SAPS knows that there's a new technology modus operandi in the form, and the criminals are using it. And some of the technology modus operandi, if it is cyber in nature and is directed to the grand economic strategy of the country, it can collapse that grand economic strategy within 7 days.
Yep.
Then we must go to CETA. And our further problem is that some of the technology that we're using, that we're supposed to use to respond to certain modus operandi, this is national security. CETA is not supposed to know. But in this case, we must go tell them. We don't know whether they can be infiltrated or whatever. So this is also part of the legislation that we're saying maybe we need support that these types of legislation, they be looked at. And if we can have control on the security response and capability, we can account better to the committee. But at the present moment, we are all sick and we've got one disease. It's new in the medical arena, is excusitis.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's what we're coming and do here. So I think if we get support, but we will look, I think the minister was addressing us in our strategic plan the previous 5 days. He said to us, we need enabling legislation. And he also instructed our legal services to say they must go and do feasibility analysis. All those legislations that are creating handicaps to us. We must bring them forward with those recommendations. That is what we're going to do, and bring them to the attention of the committee. We appreciate the support of the committee in advance on these matters. The chair, there was a previous question that was raised by the honourable member, whether am I happy about border. I think my straightforward response is not happy. We're not poorly performing, but we're not up to the expectations in terms of the current state in the border environment. But it's also a multidisciplinary issue. One, there's the Home Affairs with BMA. We are also working with them at the present moment. But then again, the staff numbers, what I want to put forward to the committee is that the personnel plan of the organization is no longer capable to respond to the policing demand. And that we want to put forward blank. And I brought this to the attention of the minister. The minister even went to the president. We have a business case that we've put together. That business case is responding to these steps by state FA. And at the present moment, our calculations in terms of the business case, we're under, no, let me not talk about this thing. I can't tell the criminal.
Yeah.
Yes, but all I'm saying is that our personnel response, our personnel plan response to policing is handicapped at the present moment. And we want to do something drastic in order to make sure that we're able to respond to the call by the communities outside. But everything is in the business case, and this business case is available. And then part and parcel of the border process, the personnel plan must also respond so that we get enough numbers that is at the borders. And the resource plan of the organization so that we get the necessary and the relevant resources. But the other challenge, we've been to Mozambique 2 weeks back, is the bordering countries to South Africa. That is the other challenge which we are addressing at bi-national level. And we have also started a structured bi-national process with Mozambique, but we are also dealing with that with all the SAUCO countries. Because for us to perform at the borders, we also need to have a concrete cross-border arrangement with those particular countries. But it's on the four, we started those particular processes. The crisis policing check is again the personnel plan, but what I want to bring to the attention of the committee, there's two types of policing. There's operational policing and there's basic policing. And operational policing is high-density policing. It is 3 times more expensive than basic policy if you have to opt for that particular model of policy. At the present moment, because of the personnel plan stretch, I think I want to try to be practical because honorable members are coming from the society. We've got extensions there of informal settlements. They extend far away from the police station. Then we've got malls that are built without telling the police station. Just the mall is put in there and quite a lot. Now those areas are not covered for policing purposes because of the personnel plan did not respond to that. As a result of that, we are forced to operational policing so that then we can do crisis policing, fire extinguishing. We extinguish the fire, then we must go back somewhere else. And anyway, the whole country is burning. So what we want to do here, and in terms of our strategy plan, we want to put an end to crisis policy. And we want to stabilize policy in the country. And hence, following the stabilization and normalization of policing in the country. So the support that we need from the committee is just to support us to get the personnel plan requirement through. we've done it, and that business case is going to go to both cabinet and treasurer. And at the present moment, no one is disagreeing with us yet, because we're put on that particular reality. And policing in the country can only be a reality. Then, Chair, we appreciate the input with regard to the adding of reservists. And I've issued an instruction that we unlock the recruitment of reservists, and the this good policy is working on that. But then, Chair, there's something little I want to put forth. There's, in terms of the new modus operandi on heist, the ATM blast and all that, the criminals, they now secure the crime scene. 500 meters away, they will deploy 15 people with AK-47. Then that particular case is reported at the police station. And then at the police station, when that particular report is done, the complaint, only two police in a police van. What are they going to do to 15 people? I'm just talking about a current modus operandi, which we as the police are required to respond. And we are responding. But we need to normalize that particular response, because as a counter, we introduce the activation plan. And we just for this, but we can't continuously respond. Police stations must be put in a position to respond. Hence, one of the reasons why we're moving towards the TRP training, because we also want our police, even if we're confronted alone, you must respond, and the criminals should not just play around our heads, above our heads. So, the reservist check, we can increase them, but we can't bring them at that level of training to respond. So we still need to have enough police over and above the reservists that we're recruiting. So that issue of the personnel plan, we're still driving it. The staffing with four or less, there isn't a police station that will have less than two. But we do have few that have got less than four, where you find three, maybe the lowest minimum, two, but we're improving on those ones. And we decided that there should not be a police station that have less than four members, because the numbers count if the police stations are not there. So that we have changed in case criminals think we still have. The theater part, one of our problems is the modus operandi. Theater does not have the capacity to do modus operandi analysis. Now, if there's a new technology modus operandi, theater will never know. Only us will continue to know. But then they are the domain of the response, the capacity that we should use to respond. And it's bound by an act. I have my doubts, Chair, state security is not bound by this act. And when we respond to national security, we're working together. So I think it's just that. Then what happened to CETA removing state assets and the verification? I'm sure the CFO can respond on this one.
Thank you, General.
Thank you, Chairperson. The essentially what happened from the CETA side at some point in time, 2006, they then took a decision, and the exact reason for the decision is not known. Why they removed these assets? The department was still under the impression that it was disclosed in their financial statements as from inception. I mean, it was approved by National Treasury inventory transfer, full account of all assets previously owned by SAPS. We established a Bureau Numeric for government in terms of the police capacity. They took account, they got control of those assets, they accounted for them, and then at some point in time there was a decision on that. So, Chairperson, the exact reason for that is not known to me. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. General Sitoli, you can go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Maybe I must just try to put it right before I can be misquoted. The minimum staff at police station is 4 members per shift at the present moment. And in response to the question, that's what I was relating to. Chair, the anyone arrested from CETA, I think we have the value chain investigations that we also account to SCOPA about. I think I cannot disclose that particular investigation, but there's quite a wider investigation that talks to that, and it affects all those who are party to the procurement.
I don't know if there's any proclamation yet, General.
I just want to know, is it SIU investigation, or who's running this investigation, and what's the end date?
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think, Chair, as I came to the office, my first day I was called to SCOPA to account on the procurement process itself. And that procurement was also involving corruption. Then, because it's us, Treasurer IP, there's quite a lot of investigation parties, that families that are there, including DPCI. Then I established a value chain type of investigation that brings us all together. So it's currently under us, not as a new chair. Chair, then the guard house, the manning of the guard house, at the present moment, we haven't ruled out security. But further to that, we haven't decided, Chair, that it's going to be trained staff members. But we're working on the capability that we want at the police station. The recent entrance to the police station by 4 criminals, they were all in AK-47. And the attack at Engo, it was rifles. Now the person who must be at the gate must be able to handle the rifle. So must have sufficient training to can respond, otherwise it's going to be just overrun by criminals from the gate. So we will be working on that. If it's security, then they will be trained at that particular level. Otherwise, we're going to use police. Then how can CETA procure assets without informing us? It's a bit of a complex question. But the current provisions allow them to do that. They are independent from us. Yes, they are independent from us, but we do engage with them. Our view is that this is a symptom of a problem created by legislation. Maybe we must get to the root cause. Okay, that's our suggestion and our approach. Then the posts, the 5,000 posts, I've issued an instruction at the present moment under rationalization. I think HR is running a special project for filling all the posts at all police stations as part and parcel of beefing up the police stations. So that process, I think it's better if I give General Ngwenya, because there's posts also under advert, but we have taken a drastic step in terms of addressing capacity of the police station. Maybe with your permission, Chair, can give it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, General. Thanks, Honourable Chair. I can confirm that with the regionalization process, the process which will assist us to move resources from provincial and national office to local level at police stations, we are going to ensure that the members are deployed at the police stations and they are played in line with their skills. We have an implementation plan, I believe, with the presentation of tomorrow,
that's
for regionalization.
Yeah.
It will be giving the details of what will be happening. In particular to the safety of police stations, we are already in line with the identified police stations. We have worked on a plan together with VSPOL, and we will be finalizing the implementation plan.
Thank you. Thank you. We can deal with that tomorrow. Thank you, General Sitori.
Thank you, Chair. I think the last three questions which I would just like to try to answer them in one is the cyber bill, then why only now we're talking about the inhibiting factors in terms of legislation. I think, firstly, Chair, because justice came into the fore, and they are actually at the last end of the criminal justice cluster, we decided we only suspend them this matter pending their advice, because we said this opinion is not sufficient because we need to respond. But we suspend that, we still going to engage justice, but we also want to escalate this matter to the criminal justice cluster so that it also receives that is attention at that particular level, and we treat it with urgency. But why only now? I think IF is instructed a structured process of feasibility, continuous feasibility analysis of all the legislations that we are implementing within SAPS or those that are actually affecting us. And this one is not the only one, there's a few others coming. So, but what is important is that we need to undertake a process of producing feasibility analysis reports where we can bring to the attention of the committee certain hiccups of the legislation, and the committee may also decide what to do. That is also including those legislations that are in conflict. And one of them is like the one where we've been asked, are we ready for the legalization of liquor at schools? I think when such legislations are passed, they end up with the police. And we do not necessarily get the opportunity to come in, that is before that. Because, again, if you get root cause analysis, there might be a problem in the education sector because kids may come drunk. And when they come drunk, they're going to call the police and say to us, kids are drunk. And I don't think we will have space in both the police stations and correctional services for drunk learners. But it's one of the areas that we would like to engage so that we say, let's rather have a strategy how we implement it. Therefore, that's part of that particular readiness. But just to sum it up then, Chair, with regard to the police safety plan, while we know there's limitations on public works and also on CETA because we must install CCTV cameras, quite a lot of technology, we will continue with them and say we want a special agent arrangement while we're working on this. But then we will appreciate also the place that will be taken by the committee just to support us. And the safety of police at the present moment is a crisis and is a national security. Therefore, is a high priority for us. And we're not only addressing what the committee is asking us. One of the instructions that are given in the strategic plan is the conversion of barrack system to estate. And that's going to be running in this particular project, including the transportation of police. We also want to move police away from entertaining themselves at wrong places, because the one was shot the day before yesterday was shot at the target. So I think if we bring in the police estate, we can channel them somewhere where they can maybe try to enjoy themselves or whatever. But yeah, I think this is how far we can go. Chair, we commit to give you a better report next time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. Thank you very much, members. We've got still the issue of the contract management, but we will deal with that tomorrow between CI and restructuring. Thank you very much. I think we note the progress reports. Also, thank you for the audit committee of SAPS being here. It's quite critical. The SAPS must get to a clean audit. We must deal with all the performance issues, and there's still hard work to be done, so we'll be monitoring the right through. We'll also await now the official annual report with the AG report, and we agree with the National Commissioner, the safety of policemen and the community is critical. We need to give the necessary impetus to that, but we will continue the discussion tomorrow. So members, if there's any questions that you haven't had the opportunity to ask today, you'll get an opportunity tomorrow. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. No, members
are up in arms.
Thank you.